to the wind and perched on Lul's thigh, her face pressed to the glass. He grabbed at her hip when the wind truck dipped in a descending spiral. She yelped in surprise and then laughed at herself, balancing herself between the glass and Lul's solid leg. Lul's thrum stuttered a little, and she wondered if he was nervous about flying or just about flying with a crazy alien jumping around the ship. That made her laugh even harder, and she could feel an edge of hysteria washing over her. She was sailing in the air in a glass pill over an alien planet, surrounded by soldiers watching mounded sand-colored buildings tinted pink and orange by the multiple suns sitting on the lap of her short new best friend. She gave herself permission to feel a little unhinged.
Meg okay?
Lul smiled up at her as she continued to laugh. He seemed wholly entertained by her reaction. She turned and put her hands on either side of his face, her pinkies just brushing the edges of his thrum spots. She leaned in closer, the tip of her nose brushing his as the ship dipped again. Meg okay. Very okay. This wind truck. Lul has wind truck? Lul huffed out a choppy sound she knew was laughter.
No, no. Wind truck is for Didetto.
He said something the program didn't pick up, and when he saw she didn't understand, he tugged at the front of his tunic. She'd seen him do that when they spoke of the generals at the worksite. Generals? She asked. Maybe these were military-only vehicles.
Generals and cameras and Batto and...
He said a few more lost words, and then one word came through.
Black.
Black? Lul waved his knuckles, a one-handed yes gesture, and pulled at his shirt again.
Black.
Oh, the people who wear black? Like the crews who tried to push you out. She knew he couldn't understand her, but there was no room to pull out the light screen. Plus, the way the ship tilted and dipped, she could hardly imagine being able to focus on it. She gripped Lul's shoulder as they tipped hard to the side, and she nearly tumbled from his lap. His breath caught, but Meg could only laugh. A long, fat building came into view before them, the rough stone exterior blushing red in the changing light. The ceiling shone back their reflection until the ship hovered directly above it, and Meg could see the space below filled with people moving through snaking corridors and around high partitions. Whatever this place was, it was busy. Before she could ask Lul to explain what it was, the ship dropped quickly enough to make Meg bounce on his leg. Another little cry of surprise, and she couldn't help but laugh again. Lul looked down into the building as if searching for something.
This? Lul talk this? Meg Lul go here? What is this?
She felt him shift beneath her. He seemed to have spotted something that made him grin even harder.
This is Lul. Sight.
They hadn't refined the word live well enough to distinguish anything clearer than residing on the planet, Meg assuming she would have enough time later on to clarify social structure issues. She'd been surprised by Prater's insight. If the Didetto didn't sleep, what sort of home life did they have? The building they were landing on was enormous and seemed to be very full of people.
Lul go to this site much?
Lul grinned.
Lul go to this site very much.
As the wind truck maneuvered through its bumpy landing on the roof, Lul started to laugh. By the time the clear door opened and the soldiers climbed out ahead of them, they were wrapped arm in arm, laughing to each other. Lul. The arrival of an air van at the social center brought more than a few curious stares up through the glass. The team of soldiers surrounding them would spark some more excitement. But Lul knew nothing would prepare the crowd below for the arrival of Meg. He knew they couldn't see her yet, or at least see what she was staring up at, just their feet. But once they stepped out of the elevator, he knew word would spread quickly. Meg stood more than a head taller than him, and he was tall. She'd be easily visible over the crowd. That's why he instructed the soldiers to take them down through the E-elevator, the one closest to his booth. How many rounds had he been gone? 11? 12? Lul had lost count, but the instant the elevator doors opened, the noises and smells and sounds of the social center blew in at him, filling him with longing. He'd missed it. For all the unbelievable events he'd experienced, he missed his friends and his center. All around them, people froze, conversations dead in mid-sentence, as the soldiers cleared a path for Lul and Meg through the narrow E-corridor. This section of the center contained mostly service quarters, laundry, dishwashing, recycling pickup. That's why he and his friends had been able to afford the booth for as long as they had. You didn't see a lot of people in black in this part of the social center. Meg's eyes were wide, her fingers holding tight to his upper arm, and he could feel her tremble against him. He knew it wasn't fear. He could tell she struggled to keep her movements small and contained the way the Urfers had when they'd first arrived. He'd become so accustomed to Meg's quick, willowy gestures and broad range of expressions, he'd almost forgotten how strange they'd seemed at first. From the stunned looks on the faces of the people they passed, however, he doubted she could have shocked them any more if she'd flown in on flaming wings. He heard her make a long, whistling sound as they passed a row of vendor stalls. Cheap overshirts, tacky movie toys, fake finger tattoos. The vendors on this side sold to their market, the underemployed or overly cheap. Lul could see Meg draw her fingers through the air and curl them up to her side, knowing the temptation she felt to trace every surface with her hands. He wanted to let her. He wanted to show her everything, but he had something to show her first. They turned the corner he found without looking, watching instead the open-mouthed stairs that followed them. Before they could get halfway down the corridor, Meg squeezed his arm with force, drawing in a loud, sudden breath and pointing her long arm toward the ceiling. He turned to see what she pointed at as she dropped all pretense of keeping her gestures small. Her head fell backward, her spine dipping over as well, and her mouth opened wide. The hand that didn't clutch at Lul pressed into her stretched stomach, and she let out the loudest laugh Lul had heard any of the Urfers make. Meg. It was official. Her mind was blown. This building, this rabbit warren of walls and shelves and cans and cabinets, teeming with Didetto pushing shoulder to shoulder through the throngs to the hammering pulse of machinery and music and voices and thrumming. It pushed up against her senses, clamoring for attention and making her cling to Lul. After the ride in that amazing machine, she thought she'd be ready for anything, but this was beyond her comprehension. Had she been shorter, Lul's height or smaller, she probably would have balked with claustrophobia, but standing an easy 10 inches above the throng, it felt like standing waist-deep in a bizarre, colorful tropical aquarium. If that aquarium smelled like cinnamon, pepper, motor oil, and dryer lint. She saw mouths drop open as she passed, ripples of stalled conversation washing through the crowds. But even as their voices dropped, the powerful pulse of the thrums built, pulsing loudly enough to be palpable. She thought if she untied her ponytail, the pulsing of these throat noises would blow the hair off her face like a breeze. She wanted to run her fingers across their faces, between their bodies, to feel the surge of shock and friction as they pushed against each other, jostling to either see her better or to move away. Her first thought was chaos. In every direction, with no discernible pattern, corridors opened and branched and turned and forked, divided by stalls and carts and freestanding drapery frames. Booths like the kind she and Lul worked in clustered together in circles and arcs and train-like chains. Some booths contained wide circular tables with enough room for a dozen Didetto. Some were narrow and low. There were booths with built-in closets and shelves, booths with video screens, booths piled high with piles of fabric. Fabric panels and folding screens cut some booths off from sight, but as they moved through the corridors, the soldiers clearing a path for them, Meg saw hundreds of faces poking around edges and popping up from under tables. Nobody shouted. Nobody approached them, but nobody missed their arrival. Lul let her hang on his arm, and she used every ounce of restraint to resist clapping her hands and pointing and jumping up and down in delight. Rhythms rose and fell, banging against each other in an almost harmony as people reacted to her presence. She prayed the recorders were getting the nuances of the sounds. When Lul guided her down yet another ribbon of a corridor filled with shoulder-to-shoulder didetto, Meg looked up, trying to maintain her bearings. Hanging from the low ceiling, draped over a long rod, were banners of fabric or paper. She couldn't tell which. She didn't look that hard at the material. Instead, all she saw were the enormous photographs, drawings, cartoons, and multicolor renderings of her face, Cho's face, and planet Earth. It was too much. They were famous. Meg threw back her head and howled with laughter. Lul. He saw the soldiers tense at Meg's strange reaction, and he gave them a reassuring nod. The comic vendors at the edge of D Corridor were selling posters of the Urfers. Of course they were. If Lul hadn't been on site with the aliens, he'd have been first in line to buy one of every picture. He'd bet his last paycheck that Poe already had. He took a deep breath, hoping with every fiber of his being that his friends had gotten his text. With a look to Meg and the softest squeeze of her thin arm against his body, he urged her forward. She straightened up, the wetness in her eyes a strange contrast to her wide grin, and let herself be led again. He could feel her breath soft and fast, her laughter quiet now as they moved. One more turn, two booths in, and Meg squeezed his arm once more. She craned her head forward to look into his eyes, the fingers of her free hand moving as if to touch his rose spot. She didn't. Instead, she bit her glass-like teeth into her lip before speaking. Lul okay, yes? Lul very okay, yes? He laughed. Whatever it was she said she could obviously hear it now. He pressed his knuckles together tight.
Yes. Lul very okay. Yes, very okay. Here.
He led her another dozen steps to where he saw the wide, staring eyes and wider grins of his best friend, Hark, and Reno Dotto. Poe was there, too, but he wasn't grinning. He wasn't standing. He sat at the edge of the booth, collapsed over the armrest in a way that must have hurt like hell, staring slack-jawed at Meg. For the first time in all the years they had known each other, Poe was struck speechless.
Everyone?
He smiled at each of them.
This is Meg. Meg, these are...
He pressed his palms together.
My friends.
Meg. They didn't look alike. She'd gotten adept enough at recognizing didetto features to see there was little resemblance among the four of them. It didn't mean they weren't family, but that wasn't what Lul wanted her to know about them. That gesture, the palms together, was neither an Earther nor didetto gesture. It was their own sign, their gesture for people together. Thinking she might be leaving forever, Lul had taken her to meet the people that mattered most to him. In the face of it, all Meg could think was, how human. The man and woman on the left of the booth seemed happy to see her. The little one on the right with the funny wispy strands around his eyes didn't seem pleased at all. She couldn't figure out how he perched on the dividing wall of the booth. She'd never seen any of the didetto sit like that, and it looked uncomfortable. When Lul made a gesture to invite her to sit down, the little one stuck where he sat, and she wondered if maybe he was disabled in some way.
Hark,
Lul said, pointing to the smiling man and then to the woman.
Reno Dotto.
Meg thought that even if the didetto couldn't hear their own thrums, there was no way anyone could miss the change in timbre when Lul said the woman's name. She looked different from the women in the work crews, somehow. Her thrum spot blushed a deep rose, or maybe it was just from the light catching off the gold strands wrapped across her shoulder. Both she and Hark dressed differently from the work crews, the fabric of their tunics rougher in texture and darker. She'd noticed before the same texture in the general's clothing. Lul's and the little one's, Poe was his name, were both of paler, thinner fabric. For the first time, she wondered if maybe Lul was poor, if such a condition even existed on this world. After some prodding and not very subtle fist-pounding from Hark, the little one stumbled back into the booth, making room for Meg and Lul to sit. The soldiers took up their posts around the booth, holding back anyone trying to get too close. That was fine with Meg. She could hear cameras purring from every direction. Let them film what they wanted. She was here for Lul. The shock of her presence wore off by inches, and Meg listened as Hark and Reno Dotto questioned Lul, their voices uncertain, their thrums pattering. The two friends tried hard not to stare at Meg, unlike the little one, Poe, who seemed incapable of anything else. Poe had slid to the far end of the booth, climbing onto some sort of added-on bench that closed the booth off into a horseshoe. Poe did finally manage to close his mouth, although Meg couldn't be certain he had managed to blink. Giving him plenty of time to get his fill of the visual, she listened to the almost hiccup-like sounds from his throat. Lul spoke quickly to his friends, his voice low and relaxed and punctuated often with bursts of laughter. Meg could tell by the way he knocked his knuckles against the table that he was excited by the story. She didn't have to be psychic to figure out what the topic was. Hark, sitting across from Lul, leaned over several times to pound his fists on top of Lul's, both men laughing. Reno Dotto covered her mouth when she laughed, peeking at Meg only when her fingers were close enough to her eyes to cover them if need be. She didn't know if it was an etiquette that hadn't shown itself at the landing site, or just some sort of timidity, but from what Meg could tell, the Didetto around her would stare until she stared back. Except Poe. Hearing his thrum slowing down to a slightly less frantic tattoo, Meg turned to face him, seeing in her peripheral vision that he had managed to climb up onto the bench and now squatted over the table, leaning on his forearms. It seemed Meg was the only one who had noticed his advance, because when she turned to face him, she heard sounds of shock from the other three. Lul started to speak, but Meg put her hand on his arm to silence him. Poe. She didn't turn the translator on. Even over the din of the room, she could tell he heard her. His eyes widened, and his mouth slipped open as he leaned in closer and closer. She didn't pull away, letting him get within inches of her face. When she could smell his breath, she smiled and said, Meg.
Meg.
The word came out in a rush of breath, and Meg was surprised to hear that of all the Didetto who had spoken her name since arrival, his pronunciation was the closest. She activated the translator. Meg touch Poe? She held out her hand, palm out, and lowered it onto his fist. He didn't flinch, although the muscles twitched and jumped under her fingers. His gaze followed her hand, and after a few light strokes of her fingers, he turned his fist over, opening up the tender pads of his palm. Lul had done the same thing early on, and she knew how sensitive those exposed pads were. Keeping her touch light, she traced swirls over the pink skin until he smiled. The translator took a moment to capture his words and refine them to their simplest form.
Poe touch Meg?
More mutters and sharp breaths from Lul's friends, but she also heard Lul's soft laugh. Yes, okay. Meg leaned in closer and then went very still, not wanting to spook the wide-eyed man. She expected him to touch her arms. The Didetto at the landing site had been fascinated by the length of the Earther's arms, but his hand came toward her face. His eyes moved over her face as if he were trying to decide what he wanted to touch. She couldn't fight back the grin that exposed her teeth. Lul always stared at her teeth. His fingers brushed her cheek, and she could feel the hard edges that surrounded the tender pads, but he didn't stop there. Instead, his hands moved to her hair, petting the pulled back strands the way one would stroke a newborn kitten. A soft, low sound whispered from his lips. Moving slowly and deliberately, Meg reached up with one hand and pulled off the ponytail elastic. Poe jumped when her hair fell forward toward her face, but she smiled and carted her fingers through her curls, loosening them. Her fingers brushed over the back of Poe's hand, encouraging him to trail his fingers along the length of her hair. When the curls slipped over the tender pads of his fingers, his face crumpled into a brilliant, brown-toothed grin. He said something to her that the translator couldn't pick up. He said it again to Lul and his friends. Then he pounded his knuckles on the table and said it even louder. Meg turned to Lul for an explanation, but the three Didetto friends burst into loud, barking laughter. They pounded their knuckles against the table, laughing and grinning at each other, and even Reno Dotto didn't cover her mouth. Lul waved his knuckles toward Meg, smiling at her, and repeated the phrase. She still didn't know what it meant, but she smiled back. Whatever had been said had gotten through to all of them. Meg held her breath, leaning in to catch the sound. The four of them, Lul, Hark, Reno Dotto, and Poe, were thrumming in perfect rhythmic harmony. Chapter 16. Lul.
They're real.
Poe leaned in close enough to bite Meg's nose, and she didn't even flinch. His fingers ran through her hair, something Lul had only dared to do once and would never forget. Poe finally seemed to be shaking off the shock of meeting Meg, his voice and his face regaining their usual comic expressiveness.
They're real. They're real.
Lul couldn't hold it back any longer. He laughed out loud, Hark and Reno Dotto following suit. The utter stupid delight on Poe's face, the shock and nerdy jitter in his voice, broke the last of the tension at the table. And just like that, the four of them were pounding the table like they were playing a drinking game. It felt so good, so easy to be laughing and talking with his friends, that he almost forgot Meg's inability to understand. He smiled at her, wanting to include her, and wasn't surprised to see her smiling back. He wondered if he looked like that when he listened to the Urfers chattering among themselves.
They're real,
Lul said. Hark's voice was rough with excitement.
And you were there. Man, you were there.
Lul told them the story of his report that was now required reading for a secret department of the Space Administration. Technically, he figured it couldn't be secret anymore. Everyone knew the aliens existed, and as he had expected, Poe had followed every second of the coverage. His friends wanted to hear the blow-by-blow recap of his first encounter with Meg, including all the heart-stopping dread of pulling what they all knew was a classic Lul Pell social error. He didn't mind their teasing. He was, after all, the one sitting with an alien.
Can I show her the book?
Poe stared at Meg, making no attempt to hide his fascination. Reno Dotto rolled her eyes, but Meg smiled. It seemed she could understand snippets of their conversation, or maybe there was no mistaking the eagerness in his buddy's face.
Yeah, why not?
As Poe ducked under the table to search around the shelves there, Lul touched Meg's arm.
Poe has thing Meg sees, yes? Magno Magigan?
Hark snorted.
You showed her a comic book? It was there. One of the archivists had it. I'm trying to show her our things, but there isn't that much out at the site.
Lul tapped his knuckles.
Plus, it was Shadow Mountain 4, Series 19, where the Evanestas clone the Shadow. Oh, that is a good one.
Great, Reno Dotto said. Now she thinks we're a planet of nerds. Poe climbed back onto the bench, slamming down a hard-edged binder jammed with pages.
That's gotten a lot thicker since I left,
Lul said.
Are you kidding me?
Poe flipped through the pages. Do you have any idea how much data has been uploaded online since their arrival? And not just from the searcher, although he's had the best stuff. He's got sources you wouldn't believe.
Anything from the landing site?
No, but he's got people on the barrier who have inside sources.
Hey, Poe?
Lul leaned forward and waited for Poe to look up from the pages he studied.
You've got sources on the inside, too. You're sitting next to the direct source right now.
Meg must have been able to sense she was once again the topic, because she looked from Lul to Poe with a smile. She leans sideways in the booth, bracing herself on her long arm to peer at Poe's battered pages. Seeing her interest, he scooted over closer to her, once again clambering over the armrest at that end of the booth. Lul could hear Meg's soft laugh in his earpiece as Poe pushed in beside her. He flipped through the pages, talking so quickly even Lul couldn't understand him. When he finally stopped to take a break, Meg put her thin hand on his. Meg, see?
What?
Lul leaned forward.
She wants to look at the book herself.
Oh my God.
Poe's hands slipped from the table and Hark bit his own fist, trying not to laugh.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Oh my God, yes. Oh my God.
She's just going to look at it, Poe, not teleport it into space.
You don't know that.
Meg ran her fingers over the pages in the book in that feathery way she investigated everything. She seemed as interested in the material that held the cut-out articles against the plastic pages as in the photos held there. She hefted the book, turning it over to examine the cover and the central fasteners. Making little noises of surprise and interest, she tilted her head this way and that. Lul could see his friend's eyes growing wider as they saw up close the incredible flexibility of Meg's upper body. He wondered what they would do if they had seen the Urfers throwing themselves through the air when the rains came. She skipped over long pages of text. Without the translator, they probably looked like nothing but scribbles to her, but she stopped and studied many of the photographs and drawings. One set of pages held nothing but a series of grotesque cartoons of vicious-looking aliens. She pointed to one of the pictures, a cartoon from a controversial comic series about the ancient sea gods that depicted an alien invader as a swimming monstrosity with one enormous eye and dozens of snake-like appendages dragging a helpless woman into his cavernous maw.
In Didet? She pointed to the creature. This is in Didet?
No,
Lul said quickly.
No, this is...
He put his hand to the side of his head.
This is here, yes?
Reno Dotto leaned in.
What do you mean by that? What's she saying?
She wants to know if the monster in this cartoon is real, and I'm trying to tell her that it's just imagination. We don't have the word for that yet, so I told her it's just a thought.
He could tell his friends weren't totally following him.
It's kind of weird how this works. It's a lot of guesswork and trying to get as close as possible.
Wait a minute, Poe said, reaching to stop Meg from turning the page.
She thinks the Gargoyle is real?
I doubt it. We just interfaced the computers and they've been studying our animal life. They seem really interested in the seas. Their doctor keeps asking the scientists something about going into them or onto them. I don't know. She's probably just looking for new animal life to tell Cho about.
Cho, Reno Dotto said with a smile.
That's the other one, right? I have a banner with him in my office. They sold a bunch of them right after the press conference when...
Wait!
Poe pounded his fist on the table, making Meg laugh. It seemed the reaction to Poe's nervous fidgeting was universal.
She asked if we had Gargoyle on our planet, right? Maybe there's a reason. Can I ask her a question?
If you stop shouting. Her hearing is really sensitive. She hates shouting.
Poe pointed to the illustrated monster and stared at Meg. When he spoke, his voice was much lower. Lul could see Meg's shoulder carriage drop in what he recognized as relief.
Meg? This creature. This is Gargoyle.
Gargoyle.
Her voice gave the word a light clicking sound.
This is Gargoyle.
Yes. We don't have them on Didet.
Poe watched her face as he spoke, and when she tilted her head, he spoke quickly.
What's she doing? What's she doing? What's she doing?
She doesn't understand what you mean. I mean, she probably gets that there are no Gargoyle in real life. She knows what drawings are as opposed to photographs.
Poe ground his knuckles on the edge of the table as Meg turned her full focus on him. Lul knew how unnerving that focus could be, like being put center stage at a pummel arena. There was an excellent chance Poe would simply blow to pieces at the pressure. He didn't, though. He climbed up farther on the bench, almost standing, and pushed his finger against the cartoon image.
No Gargarel on Didet. Gargarel on Earth?
Lul started to protest. Poe could drive the people who loved him to madness. He couldn't imagine the impression he was making on Meg. Before he could push the book away, however, Meg put her own hand on the cartoon.
Yes, Erfurs has Gargarel.
Meg. She could hardly breathe. All the hair on her arms stood on end, and it took all her self-control to not stretch out her hands to touch the people around her. Lul talked too quickly for the translator to keep up with, and his friends interrupted him with happy, high-pitched questions and comments. For just a moment, even though she was no doubt the topic of discussion, they forgot about her. And when they did, the four Didetto connected with each other. It was connection, relation, synchronization. Whatever it was, the moment the four thrums came into harmony with each other, a vibration coursed through Meg with enough strength to drown out the bedlam around her. The crowds, the clamor, the sensory overload, all of it fell away on the wave of this more than audible rush of thrumming. She could tell by their relaxed faces and easy laughs that either they didn't notice the harmonizing, or it was common enough to be unremarkable. For Meg, it was astounding. She didn't even notice the little one until he climbed out from under the table with a bulky box-like contraption. The sight of it made the group thrum ripple in what Meg could only describe as an audible tickle. She felt giddy in the midst of it. When Lul told her Poe wanted to show her something, she could hear a throb of affection in his voice for his friend. At that moment, she knew she would let Poe show her the pointy end of a knife sliding between her ribs if it meant keeping that happy, thrilling sound coming from Lul. The box was a book, a bigger, bulkier version of the illustrated book Lul had shown her at the worksite, what he called Magigan. Meg loved the feel of this one, the thick sheets of some sort of fibrous material warped in alternating patterns so thick Didetto fingers could easily get between them. She wondered if the manufacturers of the books warped the pages beforehand or just assembled them and the pages warped with use. Peering at the binding, she saw fat clamps holding the pages in place and leathery-looking blisters on the inside of the cover that connected to the binding with coarse strips. She prodded one of the blisters, seeing the strip twitch. Like so many devices the Didetto used, the book seemed to require more strength than dexterity to open. It weighed a ton. Turning the book upside down to see the pages swing free, Meg felt the muscles in her arm struggle under the bulk. Unlike the book Lul had shown her at the site, this one's cover was made up of a collage of images glued over each other. She let her fingers slide over the pictures, some glossy, some matte, all of them faded and frayed. The corner of a small drawing curled up on one side, and she knew she could slip her fingernail beneath it and peel it back, revealing the cover beneath. But she couldn't imagine any cultural setting in which proper etiquette allowed defacing a book. She giggled to herself, feeling her thoughts getting loopy, and set the book back down in its proper position. The rising and falling of that beautiful four-way thrum made her feel a little drunk. Poe climbed up close to her as she flipped through the pages. Several pages in, Meg understood this was a scrapbook of sorts, a collection of written pieces and clippings from other books. She recognized the illustration style from the Magigan book Lul had shown her. Some photographs she recognized from the Didetto database, geographic regions of the planet Jefferson had pinpointed in his mineral research. A detailed series of drawings of the sea caught her eye, and she wondered if it was the same sea they had landed beside. Poe asked her about one of the pictures. Even though it was only a drawing, it was the most similar to an Earth life form she had seen yet. The question sparked a flurry of discussion that Lul seemed to dismiss, telling her the picture was only a thought.
Maybe he meant the story behind the cartoon, assuring her that the grotesque creatures didn't actually come up from the seafloor and drag unsuspecting Didetto to a grisly death. But the little one interrupted him. He wanted to know if Earth had these creatures, these Gargarel. Yes, Meg said, noting only Poe didn't seem surprised. Earthers have Gargarel. On Earth, this is a giant squid, in the sea. The group fell silent but for their lovely thrum. Poe's throat kept a high note as he leaned across the table, staring from Lul to Hark as if making a silent point. Lul rubbed his knuckles on the table and turned to Meg.
Gargarel not in Didet. Gargarel is thought, is...
His words died away, urging her to understand him. Meg nodded and tapped her wrist. Screen okay? Here? Lul spoke low and fast to his friends, and the little one made a noise that could not be interpreted as anything but ecstasy. He tapped his knuckles and glanced at her wrist. Meg drew the light screen from her wristband, laying it flat across the table. Poe nearly knocked the breath from her, pressing in close beside her to see. His teeth chattered and his thrum hitched as his breathing picked up through his flat nose. She knew Lul could hear her laughing in his earpiece. Low sounds of wonder came from the two across the table as she flipped through the files searching for the picture. It didn't take long to find the biofile on the giant squid, which she enlarged for the group to see. Gargarel, she said, sliding the picture to the edge of the screen. While the photo was the realistic image of the giant squid, it wasn't the picture she wanted. It took several minutes to search the library, looking for the scans of the old maritime and folklore images. After several wrong clicks, she found the photo she had remembered passing during a bored perusal of the library. It was a photograph of an 18th century wood carving. In it, a giant squid had been transformed into a sea monster, its tentacles drawing in a multi-sailed whaling ship and dragging it into the frothing sea. Meg knew this was just one of hundreds of images like this, the old sea monster being the stuff of ancient legends. Gargarel, yes? She pointed from the etching to the photograph of the much more docile-looking giant squid. Yes, in Didet? In the sea? Gargarel? Lul.
Dude. Poe breathed the word. Gargarel is real. It's a freaking alien. It's real and it's an alien. Who knows how much of Magigan might be real? Do you realize what this means?
Lul stared at the screen.
It means we're probably misunderstanding what she's saying. It happens. It's happened a lot since they got here.
They all heard the doubt in his voice. Reno Dotto spoke first. Look, I'm the last to board the crazy bus, and I don't know her like you do, but unless they are artists beyond comparison... She pointed to the photo of the blob-like sea creature. This is a photograph, and it's a photograph of this. She pointed to Gargarel. And this. Her hand moved over the illustration that hovered on the screen.
Well, that doesn't mean...
Lul didn't know what it didn't mean. But it couldn't mean what Poe thought it meant. It couldn't mean that Gargarel and the shadow and the sea god's footsteps were real. That was crazy. That was as crazy as... aliens.
I just think...
Poe saved him from having to pull a thought together. He slid the book out from under the light screen, careful not to break the plane of the illuminated edges. Here, Meg, look at this. For all his original shock, Poe seemed to have taken to Meg's presence as the most natural thing in the world, talking to her like he talked with any of them. He flipped through the pages of the scrapbook, opening up to a full-color rendering of a multi-level building. He shoved the picture before Meg, who ghosted her long fingers across the lines delineating the stories. This is many, yes? Didetto have this, have many? She looked to Lul to understand what she meant, pointing from the picture to the glass ceiling of the social center. This? This is many of this? In Didet? Lul rocked forward on his knuckles.
Maybe it was the noise of the center or the distraction of seeing his friends again, but it felt harder to understand Meg's broken concepts here at the table. Maybe he was just self-conscious, but he found he couldn't move his hand from the space between yes and no. He'd brought Meg here on impulse, thinking she was leaving, wanting her to see who he was outside of the landing site. He wanted her to see his friends, see him as a real person, but now that she was here, he felt like there was no real Lul Pell to show her, like the only value he really had was the imagined connection they'd shared in the isolation inside the barricade. That wasn't really it, though, was it? If he was honest with himself, and Lul found himself staring face to face with the truth, there was more than a small part of himself that wanted Meg to be overwhelmed by the social center, wanted her to cling to him. He wanted his friends to be speechless in her presence, relying on him to bridge the unbridgeable gap. Instead, the four of them laughed and talked and stared into each other's eyes as if they were the old friends and he was the alien. It was childish and stupid, and even as he acknowledged the emotions, he felt shame rushing in to fill the cracks. And as always, heartbeats behind the flood of revelations washing over him, he saw Meg's face change. Her eyes widened, turning down in the corners as that thin line of hair along her brow arched and curved. She turned her torso toward him, the light screen forgotten, and he could hear the surprised sounds from Hark and Reno Dado when they saw the elegant twist of her thin body. Meg's hand fell onto Lul's fist, soft as always, impossibly light and warm where he opened the pads of his top finger to feel her touch. She had said she couldn't read minds, and for that he was grateful. He hoped she couldn't hear the worst details of the childish reaction. Lul is okay? He tapped his knuckles together, careful not to pinch her fingertips as he did. Goggerel? Is not good bad to see, Goggerel? Is this? Her fingers traced the drawing of the imagined Roana temple. This is no good?
It's fine. It's okay. Lul is okay. Lul is...
With her narrow shoulders turned toward him, the bony shelf of her neck taut against her strange, pale skin, Lul wondered again if it could be possible to become physically addicted to someone's attention. She didn't try to finish his sentence for him. She didn't try to hurry the words from him. She watched and waited like she always did. Like she had all the time in the world to listen to anything he chose to say to her. Like her entire life depended upon hearing the next words out of his mouth. Like she had never heard anything more fascinating than the things he said. Yeah, he was addicted to her attention. He looked at the cartoon of the Roana Temple. It was only a rendering from imagination, one of the many archaeological theories about what the long ruined structure might have looked like. Lul had already processed the shock when he'd seen how similar many of the earth buildings looked to these types of pictures. It was the stacked buildings, the way the ceilings weren't clear but were both ceilings and floors, rooms stacked upon rooms like boxes. The earther buildings he'd seen in Meg's database were constructed just so. He hadn't seen any with the ornate decorations this cartoonist had imagined on the mythical temple, but he supposed it wasn't impossible. At this point, what was? He pointed to the lines that marked the ceiling floors the artists had drawn on the building.
On Dida, no. Only...
He pointed to the glass ceiling where the far pale light glowed a little rosier than usual.
Only one. Urfers have many. Dideto, only one.
Poe huffed out a breath, a flurry of questions on the way. But Meg didn't turn away from Lul. She squeezed his hand with her thin fingers, barely denting the skin where his fist was clasped. She leaned in close, close enough that he could feel her breath on his face. Is good. Lul thought this. She pointed to the picture of the temple. Earth has this. Lul thought Goggerel. Earth has Goggerel. Is maybe Lul thoughts Earth? Is maybe Lul thoughts Meg? He could feel his friends staring and could almost hear Poe's teeth grinding, wanting to butt in and ask questions and demand an explanation, but he ignored them. Meg's eyes were wet again, large and flecked with color he could see when she sat so close. He didn't care if she could read his mind. She was reading something, something very clear, because she had just spoken to him the very thoughts that had just risen within him.
"It's like I'm dreaming you,"
he spoke softly. She wouldn't know the words, not exactly, but she knew the meaning. She had just said that very thing. Leaning in closer, he lowered his voice so that only she could hear.
"There are all these things that connect us. All these stupid cartoon kid stuff things that turn out to be yours. Temples and sea monsters and spaceships. All this stupid stuff that we entertain ourselves with and they turn out to be Urfer. They're not legend, they're history. Your history. Our history. And now you're going to leave and I'm going to be stuck with comic books and movies and everybody else is going to talk about how much we've learned. But all I'm going to think about is how much I didn't get to hear. Some black shirt team is going to come in and take all the research and present reports and they're going to ask me for my input. I don't want to give any input, Meg. I want to talk to you. I want you to talk to me. You're the best thing that's ever happened to me, and when you go, it's just going to be so..."
"Mr. Pell! Mr. Pell!" A camera arm craned over the guards, bobbing over the edge of the booth. "A moment of your time, please." The guards crouched together in a solid wall of muscle, forcing the curious onlookers farther from the booth, but the camera continued to weave on its expandable arm. Oh my God, is it... Oh my God." Poe rocked up on the seat to see over the heads of the guards. "It's him, it's him, it's him." A balding figure in a faded red tunic pressed his shoulder into the wall of guards, not moving them but also not being moved. He held up a microphone in his fist, the familiar logo wrapped around the bulk of the windscreen. The camera whirled on its arm to take in his image and then, at his signal, turned back to the group in the booth. Four wide-eyed Didetto and one Urfer, motionless except for the glassine teeth worrying a soft pink lip. Hark's hands fell motionless on the table.
"Is that..."
Lul blinked several times to be sure.
"I think it is."
Reno Dotto snorted a laugh of disbelief.
"It can't be, is it? Is that really the Searcher? The Searcher himself? I thought he never left his lair or secret hideaway or whatever it is."
The man in red smiled a quick smile, tipping his head to Reno Dotto. "I do occasionally leave my lair, young lady." Reno Dotto blushed at being caught. "I have powerful enemies who would very much like to silence me, and for that reason I keep my whereabouts unknown for the majority of the time. Sources feel safer, information flows more freely, and..." Poe cut him off, delivering the Searcher's tagline for him. "And the truth rises." He bowed with a great show of humility and then gestured to the wall of soldiers before him. "May I?" All eyes turned to Lul. He hesitated from his instinctual desire to yell, "Hell yeah!" This was the Searcher, after all. The man whose underground information and conspiracy theories had entertained, enthralled, and enraged Lul and his friends for more than a decade. He was a living legend, their hero, even when that admiration made them look like fools. Or had made them look like fools. Ever since the arrival of the Urfers, the verdict on who was crazy and who wasn't was being widely and publicly debated. But the Kartar administration guards had dragged one of the Searcher's reporters out of the press conference. The Searcher himself would no doubt be asking questions the administration did not want asked. Some of those questions Lul alone among the Didetto knew the answers to. If he let him into the booth, if he opened Meg up to the inquisitive clutch of the Searcher, he might endanger his position at the landing site. Coupled with his requisitioning of the air van, the generals might finally decide they'd had enough of upstart Lul Pell and yank him away from the site. Screw that.
The generals didn't know that Meg and the Urfers were leaving. The generals didn't know there was another ship within contact range of the ground crew. None of the other crews on site communicated as well as he communicated with Meg. None of them. They needed Lul even more than they realized, because Lul knew things no other Dideto knew. If he wanted to give the searcher an exclusive, he would. If the only cool thing that had ever happened to Lul was getting ready to disappear, he planned on exploiting it while he could. When would the searcher ever be interested in him again? Lul gestured to the guard, who let the infamous reporter through the barricade. He was thinner than he looked on his webcasts, smaller, and the hair around his eyes was sparser than it appeared on screen. But as he leaned against the table, knuckles down with all the confidence of a pummel coach about to win the season, Lul couldn't help but feel a little cowed. His gaze riveted anyone who met it. His body moved with compact surety that made him seem like a man with a mission. Even Reno Dotto, who had never been a fan, sat up a little straighter at his glance, her rose spot flushing just a little deeper as his eyes moved over her. Lul Pell? The searcher straightened up to his full height. They call me the Searcher. It's an honor to meet you. Lul hooked his fingers with the man's in a hearty fist clamp, with the same masculine grasp that he and Hark and Poe had pretended to do for years, laughing and imitating their hero. This was no imitation, though. This was the Searcher, and this was his handshake, and as the words left the older man's mouth, Poe sighed aloud. The camera whirred, closing in on a tight shot of the Searcher with Lul and Meg in the background. Before Lul could decide just how much of the information he planned to share with the underground and unconventional newsman, the camera spun in for an even tighter shot of Meg. The Searcher pulled the microphone from the holster on his leg and brought it close to Lul. What can you tell us about the massive Urfer ship that just came into orbit? Chapter 17. Meg. This was no Batto. He held a microphone and had a camera crew, but this guy was a far cry from the arrogant and badly dressed team that had led the press conference. For one thing, he dressed more like the work crews at the landing site, his shirt a light fabric of pale red. It made Meg wonder if it might be an affectation. It seemed the darker the fabric, the higher the status. It made sense from a practical standpoint, she figured. On a planet with non-stop sunlight, fabrics would fade. To be able to keep your clothing dark would probably require care, to say nothing of an indoor job. She looked again at Lul's pale tan shirt. The newcomer's shirt wasn't quite as pale, but most definitely wasn't vivid. He made his impression with more than clothes. When he appeared over the shoulders of the guards, little Poe had squeaked a sound she'd never heard from the Dideto. Poe seemed an excitable fellow, but there was no mistaking the stutter in the thrums of Lul and his friends. She didn't hear fear in them or anger as she had in the presence of Batto. Their thrums, their eyes, the fold of their hands, everything changed with the appearance of the man in red. He looked at Meg as if he knew her. In a sense, he probably did. The posters hanging from the ceiling made it obvious that her face was well known on the planet. It wasn't as if she could blend in or be mistaken for anyone else. While he didn't gape at her the way so many of the onlookers did, he didn't avert his eyes from her stare either. He met it with none of the teeth-gritting smugness that the previous reporters had shown. His expression was collected, settled. She wondered if he knew she could hear the jackhammer beat of his throat pulse. Whoever he was good. He asked Lul's permission before approaching the table. She'd heard the rise in Lul's thrum, wondering if this was a confrontation. She almost wanted to turn off the translator while she sat in the midst of this group. Words only distracted her from the audible body language. Strange, too, that the presence of so many Dideto in such close quarters only made Lul's thrum and those of his friends easier to hear, as if they floated on a tide of sound that rose closer to her ear the more people were around them. To be honest, the whole experience made her feel a little drunk, dizzy with the unfamiliar sensation.
Then the man in red pointed a microphone and asked a question that shocked Lul breathless. Any goodwill, any benefit of the doubt evaporated at the pant of panic she heard her friend exhale and the shrill spike in his throat noise. Meg squeezed Lul's hand. Lul stuttered, the translator making no sense of the jumbled sounds. When he turned to Meg, she could see the flush rising on the edges of his face. She held her hand out, palm up toward the man in red. If he didn't know what it meant, that was his problem. He seemed to get the gist of it, pulling the microphone back slightly, his expression settling into almost a smile. Meg had seen that same expression, that same reaction on dozens of Ursa reporters ever since the deep space message had been translated. The look said, "It's your move." He must have sprung something upon Lul, and the camera swung in closer toward them. With a quick snap, she flipped the light screen off of the table and up before her face. A short drag and it covered Lul's as well, a transparent wall of light symbols and text boxes. The camera slid in closer, and Meg could see the man in red lean in to peer at the images. Before his eyes could settle on any one image, Meg slid her finger along a control bar and the screen went opaque, visible only to her and Lul, impossible to see through on the other side. Another flick and the volume went down on the speaker patches. It would only give them a few moments of privacy, but she thought Lul could use it.
Didetto not see this. Didetto not see Lul and Meg. Not hear Lul and Meg.
It took Lul less than a handful of seconds to react, hunkering down lower behind the screen and dropping his voice to a near whisper. The translator missed the first few words, but she caught, "See ship. See Urfer ship. Not good."
"Oh, shit," Meg said.
Lul may not have understood the word, but he seemed to be feeling the sentiment.
"This man. This Didetto. Lul trust this man?"
His knuckle bump lacked a certain enthusiasm, but he stuck with it. She could hear the red-shirted man raising his voice and could see the camera trying to crane its way over the edge of the screen. She leaned in close to Lul, her nose brushing his.
"Lul trust Meg? Yes? Meg trust Lul. Meg trust Lul."
She turned to the screen and dragged up the image of the quantifying wedge. She ran her finger to the widest part of the wedge, the maximum point.
"Meg trust Lul this."
He ground his teeth, eyes moving from the wedge to her eyes before bumping his knuckle toward the wedge.
"Yes. Lul trust Meg this. Most. All. Lul Meg."
He held his hand up, palm out, fingers stretched straight to reveal the tender pink pads. She smiled and pressed her longer, thinner hand against his.
"Okay."
He smiled.
"Okay."
Pulling their hands apart, they turned back toward the table just as the lens of the camera came into view over the screen. With one hand, Meg flicked the light screen back down against the table. With the other, she reached up and smacked at the camera orb, sending it swinging on its retractable arm. Lul. Even he jumped when she hit the camera. Lul had seen how quickly the Urfers could move, and he knew how remarkable their reach was, but this was the first time he'd seen the strength they could put into their movements. Meg's hand was a blur, smacking the camera ball like a whip. It sounded like the camera operator might have fallen down behind the wall of the booth. She hadn't hit it hard enough to damage it. Orb cameras were designed to take rough landings. But he was pretty sure the operators weren't equipped for an attack like this. The searcher crouched, as if preparing for Meg to leap across the table. Lul almost warned him that unless he had invented rocket packs in the last hour and a half, he probably wouldn't be fast enough to catch Meg if she did decide to bolt. The searcher looked a little disappointed when Meg settled down beside Lul, adjusted the light screen to normal visibility, and folded into herself as if nothing unusual had happened. Lul liked that approach and settled himself accordingly. He did trust Meg.
face to face with the searcher, surrounded by friends and strangers alike, not having any idea how he was going to answer the question posed to him, Lul realized just how much he trusted her. Beside her, aligned with her, he felt safe. He felt strong. And maybe it was vain and shallow, but he felt important.
Would you care to explain what just happened, Mr. Pell?
The searcher leaned into the camera's view again. Lul knew what the shot would look like. The bristly brows of the searcher just visible on the edge of the screen, larger and slightly out of focus, giving the man an almost supernatural appearance. That was fine. Lul had watched enough broadcasts of the show to know how to handle this.
Allow me to explain.
Lul heard Hark snicker. How many hundreds of segments had they watched that began with those very words? He couldn't help but slip into the serious academic tone he'd heard dozens of experts use on the program. He saw the crease in Meg's brow line, a subtle sign of curiosity at this new tone.
You see, Meg and the rest of the Earthers have a complex and nuanced system of communication. I assure you they are very attuned to the social dynamics going on around them, with or without a full Kartar vocabulary.
His eyes flitted to the screen where he saw text boxes filling as her program recorded his words.
They are also a very private people who prefer a chance to compose their responses rather than blurting. Under the circumstances, you can appreciate their desire to be understood as much as possible.
So you're saying their responses to date have been carefully rehearsed? They don't engage in spontaneity?
Lul laughed in spite of himself.
You might want to ask your cameraman that question. Bet he didn't see that slap coming. And you should see them in the rain. They love the rain.
Tell me.
Lul considered the man before him, this legend of underground broadcasting. With two softly spoken words, he transformed from a polished, mythical internet icon and infamous threat to the classified secrets of the Kartar Space Administration into just another curious nerd, with the same open-mouthed wonder of Poe and needling curiosity of Hark. He didn't frame himself in front of the camera, and his microphone hung forgotten in his fist. Lul saw he had made eye contact with Meg, who stared back at him with a soft, closed-mouthed smile, her body turned toward him. Lul knew well the effect of that posture.
They're beautiful. They throw themselves into the water, fly across it like water birds. The rocks break their skin, but they don't seem to care.
The searcher's voice was a whisper.
Their skin looks like silk.
It feels even better, and it heals really fast. But the suns bother it if they stay out too long. Their skin turns red and looks sore, and they're careful to keep covered.
The searcher's lips moved, but no sound came out for several seconds, like he was having a silent conversation with himself. He nodded and then spoke a little louder.
That's why they came during the purpling.
What?
Whatever trance Meg's attention had cast over the reporter evaporated, and he pushed his knuckles down into the table. The camera moved into position, needing to adjust as Meg pulled